Okay. Thank you, Ron. Hello, everybody. It's good to have you with us tonight around the table. And like Ronnie said, it's a bad night to be out here in Carolina, that's for sure. The Carolina rain is certainly coming down where we live. And it doesn't seem to be all that wide, but it isn't moving too fast. So I think we're looking for about 4 inches tonight. So we didn't get a whole lot today, but it was enough to keep everything wet. But here we are. It seemed like we kind of go from one monsoon to the other. But the Lord knows what we need, and more so than we do. And so we'll just leave it into His hands as to what we get. Be appreciative of it. Tonight's study, we're going to be back in Jeremiah 3, and hopefully we're going to finish 3 and verses 1 and 2 of chapter 4 goes along with this chapter, and we're going to look at that. We left off at 18 last time, and we're going to pick up 19 and continue on hopefully through the second verse of chapter 4. And this is November the 18th, 2015, and this is study 62 in our study on walk. And I think we covered last week we covered both of the places where it talked about walk, I think. I believe I'm right. I'm not really sure, but if not, we'll look at it whenever we get there. But we're talking here that Jeremiah, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah in verse 6 of chapter 3, and that's what we've been dealing with for the last couple of sessions. And we're down to 19 now, and hope that we can finish it out tonight. But we didn't do verses 1 through 6 to begin with, and it'll kind of become apparent tonight as to why we didn't start there. But we started with the fifth time that the word of the Lord come to Jeremiah, and that's in verse 6. Where it said, the Lord said also unto me. So there's, like we said, there's 51 of those things. And 41 times he is going to tell you what the Lord told him. And 10 of those times, they were things that Jeremiah himself was to do for the Lord. Okay? And so that's kind of the way it shakes down. And we're talking here about the restoration of Israel, and God was very thorough in trying to get these backsliding people back to coming back to Jerusalem and coming back to Zion and getting involved in. And also, I guess to repent of their ways of, that they have gotten themselves into. And, but evidently they liked idol worship really well for whatever reason. And of course that's a problem with the Lord. But in the restoration, I want to look at verse 18 again, or even 17, and just read 17 and 18, and then we'll get started in our lesson. It says, at that time they shall call Jerusalem the throne of the Lord, because that's really what it's going to be. And this restoration here is when he comes back, I think, to rule and reign for the 1,000 years. Some of this evidently wasn't, but some of it is. And says, at that time they shall call Jerusalem the throne of the Lord, and all the nations shall be gathered unto it, to the name of the Lord, to Jerusalem. Neither shall they walk any more after the imagination of their evil heart. And so this is the, that was one of the places where we find the word walk, or their manner of life, if you will. Neither shall they have that manner of life after the imagination of that evil heart that they have. The old man, what we now consider being the old man. Because, you know, when we get into the New Testament times, Paul speaks very often about the old man and the new man, and the two living in the person. You know, you can't really do away with the old man in the secular life that you have, but it is to worship God and give God his due there, and to understand that the more you do that, the more the new man comes forth, and of course the old man goes away or goes down. And it said, and in those days the house of Judah shall walk with the house of Israel, and they shall come together or join out of the land of the north to the land that I have given for an inheritance unto your fathers. So there he was looking for the fact that they will again join up, because they won't be a split country. And of course, the house of Israel that they're talking about here is the nation of Israel had been, had gone off to the north. And I'm thinking to the north of Zion would be up the coast of Lebanon and on in that direction towards Syria, and then back even back into Turkey. And so the Lord was calling them back to ask them to combine together, and they shall come and enter at the same time and be united. And then we get to verse 19. It says, but I said, and here Jeremiah makes a difference in whether the Lord said it or whether he said it. And but here Jeremiah is the one that's writing it down or causing it to be written down. He said, but I said, and this is a question, in the form of a question, how shall I put thee among the children and give thee a pleasant land, a goodly heritage of the host of nations? And I said, here again, and I said, thou shalt call me my father and shall not turn away from me. So here's a question that he puts, how shall I put thee among the children and give thee a pleasant land, or a land of desire, a goodly heritage of the host of nations? And if you go, let's go back to Jeremiah 3:1, and let's pick up with where Jeremiah was giving these understandings there. And this is the reason that we started in 3:6. Because it goes back and says, they say, and I think this is a common saying in the Old Testament, and it certainly refers to Deuteronomy 24, verses 1-4, and If you haven't read it in a while, go back there. We're not going to go back there tonight, but go back there sometime and look at how the Lord put forth, you know, this thing about a man that could write off his wife if he found that she was not what she was supposed to be. It says, if a man put away his wife, and she go from him and become another man's, or another man's wife, that, you know, you got to read that in there. Shall he return unto her again? Shall not that land be greatly polluted? But thou hast played the harlot with many lovers, yet return again to me, saith the Lord. So here is where the Lord had said in Deuteronomy, you know, if a woman was found unclean or found in some lesser situation that she told her man before, I guess before marriage, that she was, and she really told a story about it, then he could give her a bill of divorcement, and she could go out and marry somebody else, but not him, because she had defiled herself in being with him in that situation. Their offspring or their children would have been, the children would have been considered to be defiled also. They would not be without spot or blemish. And so it was made quite clear and quite plain there that she was not to go back to him, even if the second husband, if something happened to him, that she was not to go back. But that's not the way it is with the Lord. And with Israel. Israel has said, you know, I have become espoused unto you. And he says, even though you have gone off whoring with this idolatrous worship, I want you back. And I'll take you back. And so you can see the long suffering of God in terms of how gracious he is in that respect, that he might take them back. But now along with taking them back comes certain things that they have to do, that needs to be required of them. And so he says, how can I put you that come back among the children that didn't go away and give thee a land of desire or a pleasant land and a goodly heritage? How can I do that if you have defiled yourself and polluted yourself in a situation before the host of nations? And this other Anni said was really, he answers his own question. In 19. And I said, thou shalt call me my father and shall not turn away from me. And they shall call me my father is the guide from my youth there. And God surely to the Israelite children were supposed to be from their youth guided in the words of the Lord by the Father and by their place where they go to study, the synagogue or wherever. I don't know how far back the synagogue thing goes, but it was certainly in progress when Christ showed up on the earth. And he said, it shall not turn away from me, or they were not to backslide again. that if they were taken back, there was that great danger of certainly of being out of the loop. Because he says in verse 20, surely as a wife treacherously departeth from her husband, so have you dealt treacherously with me, O house of Israel, saith Jehovah, or saith the Lord. So he says there, surely as a wife treacherously departeth from her husband. And I looked up this treacherously. It was 898 in the Strong's, and it was pronounced Baudad or Bogad, B-A-W-G-A-D, Bogad. And it means to cover up or to deal deceitfully. And this word treacherously has been showing up quite a lot in Jeremiah 3. And this is how God is looking at it. And it says, to cover up and deal deceitfully, and it departed from her husband, or to move against her guide, or her mentor, or the one that was over her in that respect, is what he's saying here, where he's talking about departed from her husband. So have you dealt treacherously with me. So ye there is you, Israel. You have dealt treacherously. You have dealt deceitfully. You have tried to cover up all the dastardly things that you've done with your idolatrous worship. But yet, you can't hide from God.
And he knows what they did.
So, you know, he knows. All ye of her O house of Israel, or all ye of Israel, saith the Lord. So, this is a kind of an indictment again, if you will, of what they have done to him, but he's still in the act of being willing to take them back. And if they don't do what he says, then there's trouble to be had, because as you go along and there are those that came back, it just didn't last. They couldn't back away from the old man, I guess. But in 21, and it said, a voice was heard upon the high places, weeping and supplications of the children of Israel. Those that were mentioned in 19, where he says, how shall I put thee among the children or the sons? So he says, the voice was heard upon the high places. Okay. And this is the places where they had sinned. You know, they generally, whenever they built their groves, and I think they got this from the Canaanite bunch, they would go up on a high hill or a mountain and carve the trees, or carve the bushes out and make their groves there. And so we find that the voice was heard from these places. It was a displeasing thing of God that he would even have to confront them with this, but yet he was very willing to do that. And he says, weeping and supplications of the children of Israel. And supplications there is 84:69, and that is in the Strong's, Taka Anunah. and it means earnest prayers. So they was weeping and earnest prayers of the sons of the children of Israel when they were confronted by Jehovah about this, because they knew. They knew without a doubt that they had done wrong. And so let's continue on with this. It says, "For they have perverted their ways, and they have forgotten the Lord their God." And this was the reason that he was confronting them, because their walk or their manner of life, that the Lord required of his children, they did not live up to. And it says not only did they not live up to it, but they had forgotten the Lord. They had forgotten Jehovah, their God Elohim. And so it was a situation that he had to confront them by a voice. And said, "Look, this is what you done here. But I don't want it to happen again." And he says in verse 22, he says, "Return, you backsliding children, and I will heal your backsliding. Behold, we come unto thee, for thou art the Lord our God." So he's telling them to come back. Not like the woman that the man put her away and she went out and got somebody else. And when you go back to verse 2 of chapter 3, it says, "Lift up thine eyes unto the high places." And we just talked about the high places. "And see where thou hast not been lain with. In the ways hast thou sat for them as the Arabians in the wilderness. And thou hast polluted the land with our whoredoms and with our wickedness." So he says, "Therefore the showers have been withholden," verse 3 of chapter 3. "And there hath been no latter rain, and thou hast a whore's forehead, thou refusest to be ashamed." Now, I don't know what a whore's forehead really looks like in relations to anybody else's. But evidently, God can see things that we can't see. And so, he says, "Because of this, I'm going to withhold the rain from you," in that situation. But it says, and where do we get to? In 22, it says, "Return, backsliding children, come back." He's saying, "Come back, and I will heal your backsliding. I will mend, repair, or cure." That is the word heal, 74:95. Because God has the ability to mend, to repair, or to cure. Anything that happens to man in his old being, because he made man, he can fix it. But there's, in order to fix it, there's also situations that goes with the fixing. You have to be in the proper will of God in order to get fixed in that situation. And so he says, "Behold," and this is the confession that they made. "So we come unto thee, for thou art the Lord our God." We're going to return unto you. We're coming back. Because we understand that you are Jehovah Elohim. We know that you can fix things. But they had to be They had to be told this. It had to come from a voice from beyond man. It had to come from God, see, you know, order for them to get back in line in that situation. So, he said, we're going to return. And then when you get into 23, this is a continuation of the confession that these individuals made, where it says truly, in vain is salvation hoped for from the hills and from the multitudes of mountains. So they're confessing that, yeah, we went up there, we went into the groves, we done the idolatrous stuff, we done all this stuff, but now truly we see that that was in vain or to no use. It was like, you remember when we were talking about vanity in one of the other books not long ago, everything was vanity. And they said, in vain, to no use, or it's to no use or it's false, is salvation hoped for from the hills. There is no God there that can deliver saving power to them. And they've come around to the point where they realize this, but it takes the voice of God and the voice of one that he sent, you know, to get them into this situation. It's, you know, they're stiff-necked and hard to get along with, these folks. So he says, in vain is salvation hoped for from the hills and from the multitude of mountains, either the great number within the mountains that we have been involved with. So there's just no God there that can provide anything toward the way of salvation for them. They are beginning to realize again that without God, salvation is not possible. And salvation is certainly cannot be had where they have been. So here, talking about from the hills and from the mountains, and either of them is used, the hills and the mountains, for the idolatrous places of worship that they've been going to. And that's where the voice came from. And again, you get the word truly in this same verse here in 23. And I put the again in there because I wanted to remind myself that this is a continuation of the confession. And again, truly, in the Lord our God is the salvation of Israel. So they have come to the point where they have now confessed that in Jehovah Elohim is the saving grace of Israel. There is no other saving grace other than Jehovah Elohim. And so we find that the continuation of the confession is finally down to a point of the thing that God wanted to hear, because this was required of Israel. If they came back, they had to confess that salvation is of the God of Israel.
Amen.
And it's no other way that it can come. And then we get to verse 24. It says, "For shame hath devoured the labors of our fathers from our youth, their flocks and their herds, their sons and their daughters." So this shame, and that shame there is 24, is the shameful thing. And if you look in appendix 6, it's Asherah, which puts them to shame. It's found in metonymy of effect in appendix 6. For shame, Asherah. The shameful thing hath devoured or eaten up or eaten away the labor, all that was produced by workforce, by the labor of their fathers. So they found that even though they're Israelites, and even though they have the promises of God and so on, they've gotten to a point to where they don't even have a place to live. All this has been taken away from them because of what they've been doing and going to other gods. And now, you know, they're coming back, but yet it also says that this shame, the shameful things that they have been involved in, have eaten up or taken away everything that was produced by the labor of their fathers. They don't have an inheritance.
Far-reaching ramifications.
Absolutely. And the labors of our fathers, it says, from our youth. Since childhood. And it speaks about their flocks. Their sheep. And it also speaks about their cattle. It kind of reminds you back when the Lord and Satan was dealing with Job. A little bit. You know, Job lost.
It was back and forth.
He lost everything he had. But God gave it back to him, you know, even more than what he had. But yet, you see when things turn wrong, how it can get out of hand. And it talks about their sons. 11:21 in the Strong. And the word there is Bane, B-A-N-E, their sons and their daughters. And it even goes, if you look that up, it talks about children or progeny. It can be children or grandchildren or even great-grandchildren. It can go back for
generation.
A period of time. It can go back generation to generation. And that people find themselves really homeless in a situation. Because God gave them the land and he told them how they could keep it and how it should work and all this stuff. But yet they went off and got involved with the shameful things of the earth. Boy, isn't Satan got a great hold on mankind? You know,
it still does.
Yeah.
As the recent events.
I think about that every time I turn the TV on to get a little news. It's not good, folks. It's just not good. Then we get down to 25. And this is still part of their confession. It says, "We lie down in our shame, and our confusion covereth us, for we have sinned against the Lord our God, we and our fathers, from our youth, even unto this day, and have not obeyed the voice of the Lord our God. So we find here that they again have come to this point, and now they're really confessing that. It says, we lie down. Actually, they go to bed with this idol worship. And they go to bed in our shame and with this idol worship being with them. And it says, and our confusion covereth us. Well, it is so bad till it's like you're laying down in the bed and you're pulling the covers up over you to kind of cover yourself up for rest. And there is no rest because that shame is still there and that shame is still covering you. And you just can't get rid of it without it being taken away by the promise of God back up where he said, I'll take away your backsliding. If you go back up a few verses. So it says, we lie down in our shame and our confusion covers us. And that's truly missing the mark. You know, there's quite a few things over there in Appendix 44 that talks about sin in one way or the other. And there's, 10 different words, at least 10 or 12 different words for it.
Yeah.
And the first one is missing the mark. Because, you know, it's a kind of a cover-all situation, but if you haven't done what God expects you to do and what he's asked you to do, then you have failed to reach your potential within him. It's like a father dealing with a child. You know, because sometimes the father has to kind of get wrong with the child in order to make him see that he hasn't lived up to father's expectations. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. And it says to continue this in 25, for we have sinned against the Lord our God, we and our fathers, from our youth, even unto this day. So it says, for we have missed the mark also against Jehovah Elohim. And we're sharing the blame, we and our fathers. So, you know, we've all got to share the blame, even from childhood until now. We need to share the blame and have not obeyed the voice of the Lord our God. We heard, but we failed in compliance because a lot of them did hear. And they went on anyway because the fathers didn't do, many of them, the fathers didn't do the same sin or the same missing the mark that their children did. You know, as it's like any family you go to, it's, you know, your father say what's right and what's wrong, and then you wind up doing what's wrong. And, you know, and when you get to be a man, then there really ain't a whole lot he can do about it if you're your own person at that point. So, many heard, but fail in compliance to the voice of Jehovah Elohim. And so that covers three. Now then let's go to there's two verses in four that goes along with it. And then the Lord picks up this deal with the house of Judah. Okay? This is Israel here, basically, that he's been talking to, but he's wanting them to come back together. He's wanting them to join again and become the whole house of Israel. But he says here, if thou wilt return, O Israel. And every time you see that O Israel there, He's talking about all of these tribes or groups that went up north of the land that God had given to them, okay? If thou wilt return, O Israel, saith the Lord, return unto me. And if thou wilt put away thine abominations out of my sight, then shall thou not remove. So he says, if thou wilt, it's your decision. God says, if you will, you know, this is an agreement that's works both ways. If you will, I will. Conditional. It's a conditional thing. If thou wilt return, or if it is your decision to come back, O Israel, this northern kingdom, saith the Lord. Here's, it's Jehovah speaking. And quite often Jehovah speaks. Jeremiah is making it clear that this is not Jeremiah's words. It's Jehovah's words.
Word of the Lord.
That are doing the speaking here. Then he says, return to me or come on back. And if thou wilt, put away thine abominations. So if you come back, if you come back again, you must turn off or turn away or withdraw from this filthy idolatry or detestable things. He says you've got to wipe it out simply because he says that he wanted it out of his sight. If thou wilt put away thine abominations out of my sight. Well, how do you put things out of God's sight? You can't hide anything from God. So the only thing you can do is to leave them behind. Or promise to never return back again to him. If he's going to heal you or mend you or whatever it takes to get rid of these awful things that you've done. He don't want to even be remembered of them anymore. You know, we always said out of sight, out of mind. That's not necessarily so with man, but it can be that way with God. He can choose to forget. Don't ever forget that. That God can choose to forget.
Amen.
And so he's talking about that in 4:1. He says, and if it's your desire to come back again, you've got to turn off or turn away or withdraw from this idolatry stuff, these abominations. And there to put away is 54:93. And it's suor. And it means to turn off or withdraw. And the abominations is 82:51 in the Strong. And it's Shekuts. The abomination, Shekuts. And it's called filthy idolatry or detestable things out of my sight. He don't want to see them. He don't want to know about them anymore. If you're going to do away with them, you can come back. Out of my sight, away from both you and me. That's what God's saying here. Yeah, they're not to be in your sight, and they're not to be in my sight. And if we, done that, then shall thou not remove. And this is another thing that he's added to it. And they've got to swear or make a confession that they're not going to stray away again from Jehovah the Lord. So, he's not gonna keep doing this to the same people. You know, when he got fed up with the people in the wilderness, things come upon them that they didn't live. Their children did, but they didn't live.
Yeah.
And so, God's only gonna go so far. He's full of long suffering, but it gets to a point where you know, it's no longer acceptable to him. And he wants all this stuff out of his sight, out of his mind. Because it says in verse 2, and thou shalt swear. So they've got to take an oath. An oath to God. And thou shalt swear, the Lord liveth in truth, in judgment, and in righteousness. And the nations shall bless themselves in him, and in him shall they glory. So when all this comes about, and all these nations come to Israel, and they come to the supreme leader of the world, and Doherty and I had a little discussion about this the other day. She said, Cecil, I wish you'd do a study on crowns. Said, where's all these crowns going to come from? I said, well, I'll tell you one thing. It may be figuratively, some of them may be real, and some of them may be figurative. But when he comes and he sets up the throne of David in that place where the earthquake has leveled it off, and these people come there for gatherings. Whenever they bring their insignias of power with them, they're going to have to leave them with the one that has the power. And so, Christ is going to wind up with all of the crowns. Now, I don't know about the righteous crowns, but I'm talking about now the physical crowns, the ones of the world. Because at that time, he is going to be the ruler and the leader of the world, whether they want it or not. And so the world is going to have him for that length of time. And so he's going to be the supreme commander. But here's the thing. And thou shalt swear, these children of Israel that come back, the Lord liveth in truth. Now look at this. The Lord liveth in truth. This is what you're going to swear. You're going to take upon you an oath. The Lord liveth in truth, in judgment, and in righteousness. And when you look at these things, truth, judgment, and righteousness, the three are as one word. You could take truth and say, okay, it's going to be done in truth. But in truth, it has judgment and righteousness that goes with it. And if you look at judgment, then truth and righteousness goes with it. And if you look at righteousness, then you're going to have truth and judgment. So you can't separate the three. Do you remember in the Word of God where it talks about the threefold cord?
Ecclesiastes.
How strong it is.
Not easily broken, it says.
This is what you're looking at. It is the threefold cord. That's what God is. And that's how you're going to be. And these people have to say in an oath that they're going to, that's what they're going to teach. This is what they're going to say to the nations that come in to Zion, that come into the land, and you bless themselves in him. So, it says, and the nations, that's 1471, go ye. the Gentiles shall best themselves. They're going to kneel and give thanks to Him, Jehovah. And it says, and in Him shall they glory. And that glory is 1984. That's Halah. It means to shine or to be renowned. Because in those that are in the will of God, there's going to be some semblance of understanding that they are in Him. Whether it be color or whatever it be. There is going to be this light, if you will. And I went thinking back to Ronnie's study in John, where more than one time it talks about God being the light. And so if they're in God and He is the supreme being at this time in that place, then I think there's going to be a difference even in the way they look. Now, I might be wrong. But, the way these words come forth and comes out, it looks like that's the way it is. That's the way it's going to be. And so this is what these people had to do to come back. And God's given them every chance to come back to the land. But it's short-lived. It's not going to last all that long because, when we started this study, we said that Isaiah and had a part. Ezekiel had a part in this thing, and also Nebuchadnezzar, and their times kind of run concurrent with each other because Nebuchadnezzar, comes into Jerusalem and he makes three trips there. And finally, Jerusalem is burnt. It becomes desolate. It becomes uninhabitable in a sense for a period of time. And this is how God deals with people that don't hold up their end of the bargain. And this is what happened. Some of these folks who come back said, yeah, we'll take this oath. We'll do these things. We'll get right. We'll do this. But God's not going to give you chance after chance after chance. He is eventually going to take upon Himself destruction of those that don't do what they say they'll do. Just like it was in the wilderness when the people were talking against God and downplaying His goodness to get them out of the land and get them into the land that He had promised them. So we'll stop there tonight. We'll pick up again in Jeremiah 6. I want to go through Jeremiah 6 because there's three places in Jeremiah 6 that talks about walk and the reason. And there are other places, but, it just happened here that within just a few verses they were three places, and we'll take them up hopefully next time out. But this covered the dealing with Israel and getting Israel back in the land and of course the commands and the conditions and all of that went along with it. And then this was from 3:12 to 4:2, and then from chapter 4, verse 3 through chapter 6:30, he deals with Judah, with those that lived there in Zion, all along, or in the area there of where the holy city was. And so he deals with them and the rest of 4, 5, and then only in the 6. And so that kind of gives you a kind of a heads up on what's coming up. But we're gonna deal with chapter 6. It may take a couple of sessions to get through 6, but we'll hopefully the Lord will allow us to do that. We'll get through that in if the Lord willing. So thank you again for being with us, and hopefully that you saw in this particular part of Jeremiah that God is long-suffering and His love is still with His people, but they weren't very lovely, and down through the ages. He has dealt with us all when we weren't lovely. He even sent His Son when we weren't lovely to die for us, that we would not have to make the blood sacrifice because He had already made it for us. And so that's how great our God is. And all we have to do is listen to Him, to be tuned in. And I heard a preacher the other day on television or radio or somewhere I was going, I can't remember now, but the question was, who do you listen to? And I thought, boy, I thought he was going to do my study, but he didn't. But who do you listen to? And that was a good point. That we sometimes we listen, but we don't really listen to the voice of God.
Amen.
Thank you again. God bless you. Remember us in prayer. Good night.